Meet Us Down Here, the Thalwag series, conversations with the people caring for our lands and waters. I'm Denise Loffman with the Columbia River Estuary Study Task Force, or CREST. This series grew out of a simple idea. There are people all across our region doing deeply important work for rivers, estuaries, forest, farms, shorelines, and communities, and most of us rarely get to hear how that work actually happens. Each month, we'll talk with organizations from Tillamook and Clatsop counties in Oregon to Pacific and Wakayakum counties in Washington about restoration projects, partnerships, challenges, history, and the realities of caring for land and water over time. The word Thalwag refers to the deepest part of a river channel, the natural path water follows as it moves downhill. It felt like the right name for these conversations. So thanks for being here. Today, I'm joined by Jason Smith, CREST's Director of Habitat Restoration and Monitoring, and Narayan Elasmar, our Associate Director of Monitoring. And for this first episode, we thought we'd start by talking a little about CREST, who we are, how this work began, and what habitat restoration and monitoring actually look like across the Lower Columbia Estuary. A lot of people hear terms like restoration, resilience, or monitoring, but don't always get to hear what the work looks like on a day-to-day basis, or why it matters to communities and ecosystems over time. So maybe that's a good place to begin. So Jason, why don't we start with you? Why don't you tell us just a little bit about yourself?
Awesome. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I'm Jason Smith. I've been at CREST since 2009, which is crazy to say. It's an amazing experience. I grew up at the coast. I was actually born in Astoria. I grew up in Seaside. Went off to spend my college years in the Valley, and I came right back home. And I've been involved in this kind of restoration community ever since. I started out at the Park Service, and then as soon as the opportunity arose to join the CREST team, I hopped on board and been here ever since.
Awesome. Thanks, Jason. Narayan, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and your journey to CREST?
Yeah, Narayan Elasmar. I'm from Florida. Came to Astoria in 2012 with Mandy Flights, my partner in crime. I got a job with the National Marine Fisheries Service as a fisheries observer. That's what brought me here to Astoria. I signed a one-year contract. And we thought, oh yeah, we'll live this 1 year out and we'll go on to the next place. 1 year rolls around, we're still here, 14 years later. I've been at CREST for 12 years. And what brought me to CREST was my love for fisheries. I transitioned from a marine fisheries background, but out here it's so salmon-centric, and that sparked my interest, and that's why I applied at CREST.
Sounds good. Thank you both. And I'll just give a brief introduction of myself. I'm Denise Loffman. I'm the executive director at CREST and the host of these podcasts. I've been working in this region since 2004. I was the Watershed Council coordinator for the Tillamook Bay Watershed Council from 2004 to 2012, and then started at CREST in 2012. And what brought me to this work is I've always been really interested in this connection between communities and helping communities in different ways, whether it's economically or around environment. And I think there's a really interesting intersection actually between communities and environment, and how working on environmental issues can make the livability of communities even better. And I just find it a really interesting place to work. And so I've been really fortunate to spend my career focused on that. And CREST is really an amazing organization. We're a council of governments. We have members, there are local cities and local counties on both the Oregon and Washington sides of the river. And we focus a lot of our work on habitat restoration and monitoring. And so today we just want to have a conversation about that work, let Jason and Narayan talk more specifics about the work, and let everyone in the audience just hear the conversation and engage with us. And then we're really looking forward to not just talking about CREST in this podcast, but really bringing in other organizations that are also doing work around water, rivers, the ocean, and the lands of this region. And so we thought we'd just kick it off with a little info about CREST. So Jason, do you want to tell us a little bit about your work in habitat restoration and caring for the Lower Columbia River estuary for decades? CREST has been around for 50 years. So yeah, so tell us a bit about the habitat restoration story.
Yeah, absolutely. So when people think about, you know, restoration and salmon recovery, you know, they often just think about the dams, and that's for good reason, right? Over the last century or so, the Columbia River system has just changed so dramatically. We've lost these huge areas of tidal wetlands and floodplain habitat to development, diking, agriculture, and industrialization. And while at the same time, the federal hydropower system fundamentally have just completely altered the river itself. So by the time many Columbia Basin salmon and steelhead populations were listed under the Endangered Species Act in the 90s, you know, there was growing recognition that we needed to do more than just manage the fish themselves. You know, we also needed to restore the habitats that they depend on throughout their entire life cycle. And that's really where a lot of CREST restoration work fits in, which is really cool. You know, today our habitat restoration program works with a wide range of partners to restore tidal wetlands, reconnect floodplains, improve fish passage, and just rebuild those natural processes throughout the estuary. A lot of our work happens through the Columbia Estuary Ecosystem Restoration Program, or the CERP, which is a collaborative effort by Bonneville Power and the Corps of Engineers, alongside a lot of local organizations like CREST and a few others. And at its core, this program is just focused on restoring habitat for ESA-listed salmon and steelhead by reconnecting rivers and wetlands that were cut off from tidal influence decades ago. And in practice, that can mean things from replacing undersized culverts, removing tide gates, reconnecting these historic tidal channels, restoring wetlands, or installing large wood structures that create refuge and feeding habitat for juvenile salmon. And one of the things that makes this work unique is just how science-driven and adaptive it is. Every project we build is just informed by lessons learned from previous projects. We're not just restoring habitat and walking away. We're continually evaluating how these sites function over time and whether we're meeting the ecological goals we set out to achieve. That ongoing learning process is just incredibly important because it helps us improve future projects and refine our restoration approaches over time. In many ways, we're not just building restoration sites, we're building like knowledge, and that makes the entire program more effective as we go on. And ultimately, a lot of this work comes down to restoring connectivity. You know, these juvenile salmon, they rely on these heavily on these off-channel wetlands and tidal habitat during their transition from freshwater to saltwater. And these areas provide slower water, protection from predators, cooler temperatures, and just these really productive food webs that help young fish grow larger before entering the ocean. And that growth matters. You know, a slightly larger juvenile salmon has a much better chance of surviving in the ocean and eventually returning as an adult, or at least that's what the current science suggests. So while these projects may look like wetland restoration on the surface, they're really about rebuilding these natural systems that support salmon, wildlife, and healthy communities across the estuary. So this work itself is just incredibly collaborative, you know, because CREST is one of what I think is the most unique things about CREST is that we don't own land. So every project just depends heavily on partnerships with private landowners, you know, local governments, state, federal agencies, these engineers, these scientists, and the contractors. It's all of them together that helps make these things happen. And these projects don't just happen instantly. They take years to move from an idea to construction. There's site assessment, engineering, permitting, funding, construction, and then all this long-term monitoring afterwards. But over time, these efforts really do add up. And, you know, since 2006, CREST and our partners have completed more than 40 restoration projects throughout the lower estuary. And we have many more currently in development. And that's just so cool. And while salmon recovery is a major driver behind this work, The benefits extend far beyond fish. You know, healthy wetlands also improve water quality, reduce flooding and erosion, increase climate resilience, support recreation and local economies, and create educational opportunities for communities throughout the region. And that's really what makes this work so rewarding for me. You know, it's about restoring natural processes in a way that benefits both the ecosystems and the people. And it's also my backyard. You know, this is where I grew up. So this work is just absolutely amazing.
Jason, that is such a great overview of our habitat restoration program. I have a question for you. If you were to think back over your many years of as a project manager before you became director of the program, like, do you have a favorite project or one that you could just tell us a little story about, like the personalities involved, or give us in the studio and the listeners like a sense of a story of a project, what it's like to implement one?
Absolutely. I mean, being involved from start to finish in a project is really like the most incredibly rewarding experience, because you get to like think about it before, and you get to like identify what's wrong with the site, what's going on like that, and how are we going to make it better? Like, do we need to make it better, and all those things. And one of the best examples I have of that is a project we call Bear Marion Ferris Creek. It was just this crazy project that involved, you know, three different tributaries of the Columbia River, several landowners, some private, some public. And it was a cool opportunity for me to introduce myself, particularly to like the private landowners, and, you know, and let them know that, you know, hey, we're this organization, we're trying to do these good things, we're trying to help out. And, you know, and then as soon as I started talking about how like I grew up here and why I care about it and why I love the work that I do, it was cool to see them like kind of open up and be like, oh, you grew up here. And then a lot of people just don't understand what it is that we do. And it was sort of just kind of opened up the door where we started connecting on all these other various levels. And then, you know, just kind of teaching them about what it is that we do, but also learning from these landowners about what they want to do and why they want to be like also good stewards of the land, was just super cool, super rewarding. And the project was complex. It involved a lot of different, you know, channel excavation. It involved popping holes in these levees and just reconnecting these floodplains. And it was a fun project, a challenging project. I got to be involved in it from its like infancy, and then watching it now, you know, many years later. I think it was completed in 2018. It's just so cool to see how it's evolved over time, and then also touching base with those landowners after the fact and hearing that they're like still super excited about the project, and they're like telling me what, you know, what they think worked really well and what they think could have been improved upon. And that those are great, because then it helps us learn how to do better next time.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. Thank you, Jason. Yeah. Well, Narayan, you're up. So can you tell us all a bit about the monitoring work that we do at Crest, and why it's so important that we don't just, you know, build these projects and restore ecosystem function, but that we're also like tracking what's happening, and that the science is so important to our work too.
Yeah, I would love to talk about our Crest monitoring. Crest monitors its restoration sites using a variety of methods, all guided by strict protocols to ensure data are collected in a standardized, repeatable, and scalable way. This approach allows us to track changes at each site over time and compare results across multiple projects throughout the estuary. Crest monitors a number of metrics, including salmon use, vegetation, hydrology, and water quality, run lab and field studies, and use tools like drones and GIS to track site changes over time. This effectiveness monitoring helps us see whether projects are working as intended, improving fish access and habitat for juvenile salmonids, and guides how we adapt and improve future efforts. Our BPA restoration work through the SERP program, which again is the Columbia Estuary Ecosystem Restoration Program, is monitored under the Action Effectiveness Monitoring and Research Program, which is AMER. Lots of acronyms here. I'm going to just refer to the program as AMER from here on out. AMER is a long-term initiative to evaluate how habitat restoration projects influence juvenile salmonids in the lower Columbia River. The program focuses on determining whether restoration actions improve fish access, water quality, and habitat conditions in wetlands and floodplain systems affected by hydrosystem operations. AMR is really the science backbone of the SERP. The AMR program monitors both restoration sites and reference wetlands, which are relatively undisturbed areas that represent desired ecological conditions. Comparing restored sites to these reference systems helps quantify progress and provides benchmarks for evaluating restoration success over time. Sites are designated an AMR level according to their geography within the river system, the type of site, and the restoration actions that are proposed. All sites will get level 3 AMR monitoring, but some sites, according to what I mentioned, according to the geography and the type of site that it is, will get level 2 and level 1 monitoring. So level 1 is the most intensive, that's actual fish monitoring, the most comprehensive level of monitoring, and it focuses on juvenile salmonid use and movement. Methods may include pit tag arrays, fish passage assessments, seine and or trap net fishing to evaluate fish presence, residency, and access to restored habitats. This work is done with the extremely knowledgeable and get after it personalities that are Jeff Grote and Curtis Regner at NOAA. And then level 2 is more of a habitat and biological monitoring approach. This level evaluates key ecological indicators that support salmonids. And the metrics included in level 2 are vegetation, community sampling and surveying, sampling of terrestrial macroinvertebrates, and a more intensive water quality assessment of the sites. And this work is done with Lower Columbia Estuary Partnership out of Portland. Level 3, as I mentioned, is conducted at all sites in the SERP program. And it's basic physical attribute monitoring. The level 3 provides a streamlined assessment of site conditions and habitat development through a less intensive water quality monitoring, measurement of sediment accretion and or erosion, and setting up permanent photo points, both terrestrial ground-based photo points and drone aerial-based photo points. So that's a wrap-up of our BPA-funded projects. Some other partnerships that we have one called Keeping Invasives at Bay. This project came through a collaborative agreement between Graham Clagg of the North Coast Watershed Association and Carla Cole and Kayla Furman from Lewis and Clark National Historical Park. Crest was invited into the project to lead the field work and ground truthing element of the project. In short, the project is to track, target, and treat invasive vegetation in Young's Bay. We fly sites in Young's Bay with a drone, and that's me doing the flying. The imagery is processed and vegetation is detected by Graham's GIS wizardry skills. Then maps are provided to Green Ridge Resources for treatment, where he goes out and actively treats vegetation with herbicide.
You've given a really great overview of the monitoring department, but I bet listeners are like, yeah, but what's it like to go out and tromp around in a wetland and do this monitoring work? I'm interested in hearing like a story about what's it like to get out there. I know it's really hard work. It's very physical. You're tromping through a lot of vegetation. Often you're trying to skate on the top of mud, if at all possible. And so, like Jason, I'm interested in hearing a story or examples of some days out in the field, maybe ones that went really well, or maybe one that was just didn't go so great. Could you tell us a story about monitoring?
Yeah, like you say, it is hard, physically demanding work. I live in Waiters. You know, for 8 hours a day, you know, sometimes longer, In chest waders, in mud, water, blackberry, reed canary grass, just walking around and not even walking. It's mostly tripping and falling and getting up while your hands are full with all this equipment. But it's beautiful and I love it. I get to hang out on these wetlands or on a boat or in the forest. I feel like I was built to be in the field and to collect data, scientific data that's used for restoration. One story that comes to mind is one time, probably in 2016, 17, something like that, we were out doing AIMER level 2 work, which is vegetation work and channel cross-section work, where you're surveying with a real-time kinematic, an RTK, which is just a fancy GPS that's extremely accurate, that gives you a position but also an elevation. I was carrying this thing around getting these channel cross-sections, and I see this area. And this was at the Waluski-Youngs site, which is at the confluence of the Waluski River and the Youngs in Youngs Bay. So I'm trying to do this channel cross-section, and I see this area that was devoid of vegetation, which usually, you know, that means it gets inundated pretty often. That's why there's no vegetation there. And usually that stuff, it can either be a little muddy, or sometimes there's enough sand in it where it's able to sustain your weight. I was like, oh, I'll walk right through that. And I immediately sunk to my knees, and I tried to struggle, get out. And it was like quicksand. It really was. And eventually I got all the way to my chest, where it was overtopping my waders. So mud and water were just inundating my waders, and I couldn't get out. It was the first and only time that I was ever stuck. I had to call for help, and I felt like I failed miserably, but I made it. I'm still here, and I welcome it, because I think that's the only thing that's going to take me out is me drowning in mud.
We don't want you drowning in mud, Narayan.
It would be my way to go.
Oh, that is a great example of just how, not just physically, but like mentally challenging the work can be. The other thing I wanted to ask you about is you're our chief pilot. You do the vast majority of our drone flights. You're also incredibly talented in terms of getting drone footage and then stitching together these videos that have been really important for us with funders and with telling stories of restoration sites. Like, what's it been like to be able to access, do the monitoring work, like from the air? I just think it's another interesting area of the work that we do, and so wanted to give you a chance to talk about it.
The drone work has been an interesting progression. It started just with, oh my God, these are so cool. Denise, let's get one of these. And I was half joking, but you were like, yeah, let's do it. So I get this thing, and initially the learning curve was minimal. Like, I was able to just plug and play, throw it in the air and take pictures. And I realized that the technology has gotten so incredibly advanced that you just kind of have to keep up with it and learn as it rolls, or else you kind of get left behind. But what it has provided to Crest is just that aerial perspective of a site. I mean, it blows ground-based photography out of the water, because you can see the site at a landscape level. So it provides a different perspective. And not only am I like actively piloting with a remote control to get oblique photos, But what's kind of more important are the more technical, where you automate everything. You automate the drone, you tell it coordinates and a grid pattern, and it flies in a grid pattern, taking photos where these photos overlap, and then you create this huge, large orthomosaic, it's called. It's basically just a mosaic of all those photos stitched together. These orthomosaics are then used with GIS to make maps of the sites. And when you fly these sites to make these orthomosaics over time, you get a series, and you could layer them on top of each other. So you really zero in on what aspect of the site is changing in relation to this restoration work. And then as far as the video content, where we are stitching these videos, photos to make a video for funders and regulators, that work just came out of curiosity and interest. Before I was doing it with Crest, I was doing it on my own during COVID. These funders and regulators weren't able to travel to do site visits. So we turned it into virtual site visits, and we'd make these videos, and it really stuck. Now our funder, BPA, they really enjoy it.
Awesome. Thank you. Jason, I wanted to give you a chance to jump in too, because early in your career, you were with the monitoring department before you were with the habitat restoration department, and just wanted to give you a chance to kind of chime in as someone who's got so many years at Crest. You know, any stories or any thoughts you have around more broadly, like this work we do?
You know, we used to have a saying or a credential. You had to earn your stripes to become a certified mud walker. And it truly is a talent to be able to move across these landscapes, particularly all our lovely muddy ones, and not get stuck in the mud. And when you do, it's pretty hard to ask for help, because you don't want to lose that credential. And I'm happy to say I still haven't lost mine. but it's great work. It's hard, very challenging work. And like the monitoring side of it, you know, it really is so crucial, because we want to know that, you know, if we're this investment of time and resources, we want to make sure that it's actually doing what it was intended to do. And without actually collecting all this data and then learning from it and then applying it to the projects, you know, it's a huge piece of the puzzle. You know, so fun to fish these sites and actually see the fish using them right after you open them up and like remove whatever that barrier was, whether it was a culvert or a levee or something. The fish come back like so quick, and it's so rewarding and so fun.
So I just want to thank you both for coming and sharing stories about Crest and the work that you both do with the organization, and sharing a bit of maybe even our organizational culture with listeners today. We're a pretty fun crew, I think. And I just want to thank you all for listening to Meet Us Down Here, the Thalwag series, and we'll see you down here next time.
You can learn more about Crest at columbiaestuary.org. This series is produced at the studios of KMUN by me, Emily Horde. Thanks to Nathan Turchon for producing the original theme music. The Thalwag series airs the third Tuesday of every month and can be found wherever you find podcasts.